All right. Welcome, everyone. And, of course, the order of business today is to begin taking action on our omnibus finance bill. Before we turn to that, let's see, Representative Quam, would you like to move the minutes from the April 15th meeting?
Yes, Madam Chair.
All right. Any questions or comments on the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor of adoption of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Minutes are adopted. Thank you very much. All right, members. I'm then going to go ahead and move House File 844, which we had laid over. And then to get it everything formally before us, I would move the A15-0458 amendment. And again, this is my amendment, the delete all. And so puts the bill in the shape that I would like it for us to begin discussion and consideration today. Any questions? All right. With that, then, all in favor of the A15-0458 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. All right. So the delete all amendment now is in House File 844. And so the bill is now in order to begin discussion and amendments. Representative Murphy, is there anything you wanted to say? I'm going to just, members, for sake of kind of moving things along, and I know we've got a lot of committees meeting at the same time, but I'm going to kind of hold my comments overall about the bill and that until the end, and I thought we'd just kind of go to amendments and that. But Representative Murphy, if there's anything you wanted to say at the beginning of the meeting, I'd like to offer that to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's agreeable with me, and I saw some of my members and told them that I hoped that we would be done at 2:30.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. Could you say that one more time? I had in my ear.
I spoke to a few of my members earlier this morning, and we talked about amendments, and we talked about speeches, and I said I hope we would be done by 2:30.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. I think for myself, but for as particularly staff, people have been working really long hours for over a week, and everybody's tired, and I really hope we don't have to come back late tonight or tomorrow. Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, you referenced that there are other committees meeting, and I know Representative Marcourt and Representative Hertas and Representative Erickson and Representative Anderson and Representative Quam. I think we broke a golf foursome there. have property tax division beginning in about 7 minutes. They failed to finish the job last night. And I don't know how long it'll take today, but I would appreciate the courtesy of our being called back in the case of any roll call votes, and certainly, obviously, the vote on the final bill. I do also have an amendment that I would like to offer, so at some point we just need to, if you would be so kind, make some arrangements to allow me to do that.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. We will, and like I said, depending on how quickly we can dispense, I mean, we've got a couple of amendments that are technical in nature that I hope we can get through, and we've had some discussions with the minority about amendments, so a number of them I think we're more than happy to take, so we may be able to move through some of them pretty quickly, I think. But members, I know that with all the competing things going on, if just to make sure that we and or the pages know where you are so that we can come and retrieve you for roll calls would be appreciated.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. All right. Any other things anyone feels they need to say before we turn to amendments? Okay, Representative Garcia. We won't do that. All right, members. So everyone should have the amendments in their packets that were filed. And I'm going to go ahead and just start drawing them up. And then if it is yours, please speak up, and we can move to discussion on it. And the first one actually is mine, and this is a technical amendment, and the staff, obviously, in combing through and double-checking things on the bill. A few things needed to be just cleaned up and that. So I am moving the H.O. 844A 10-3 amendment. And Mr. Strom or Ms. Johnson, do one of you want to walk through this again? This is the technical cleanup amendment.
Madam Chair, members, thank you. The amendment in front of you, labeled in the upper right-hand corner, H.O. 844A 10-3. The items that go in this essentially are those that we found when going through the bill again to conform to how the bill has been described and reported on the fiscal printouts. Essentially, let me just real quick run through these line items on 1.3 of the amendment, just clarifying language regarding the teacher-powered schools. The next couple of lines have to do with clarifying the way the integration aid levy shift works. And one thing I should point out about this, after numerous conversations with the Department of Education, appears the levy effect will not take place until the Pay 17 levy. This is different than what we were otherwise expecting. So in terms of the levy printout that's in your packet today, you'll see a separate column for Pay 17 where the integration levy will first be affected. It won't affect the revenue in any case, and the aid shifts essentially start on the manner that's in the bill, but the levy shift starts later, and because of the recognition process, this timing should lead to the full amount of revenue in both years, but with the levy change starting not till Pay 17. Then a couple of changes that correct on lines 114 and 115. These are both changes that were typos in the initial governor's bill regarding riders. The first of those for the Q program, the Collaborative Urban Educator Program, one of the four participants had a typo, should be $195,000 for each of those four participants. And then secondly, on line 1.15, for the purposes of the student organizations, again, a typo that eluded us. There's no change in the top line spending, still $725,000 for those. But the health-related organizations, a 4 looked a little too much like a 9 all the way through the process, and it should be $46,000 that's set aside of the rider for that. So these are both the changes on 114 and 115 conform to the base. Were mistakes that we picked up that we carried through the process from the governors as well. Then sections lines 116 through 119 fix the ECFE and school readiness to conform to what's been described, just essentially one line missing and some obsolete language removed. And then the last line I'll have Ms. Johnson speak to, if that's all right, Madam Chair, having to do with the way that the Board of School Administrators' budget is going to be held constant.
Thank you. Ms. Johnson.
Madam Chair and members, we discovered after the forecast was put out and we put out our spreadsheet that the Board of School Administrators in last session, we adjusted their base operating budget to $225,000 per year, and we were only carrying the $167,000. So the approach that we took to be able to account for that is to subtract that from the, or have that piece come from the Department of Education's appropriation, that would be a rider within the Department of Education's portion, but the bulk of the appropriation for the Board of School Administrators will come from the Special Revenue Fund as we had originally intended.
Thank you.
And then, Madam Chair, I believe you just had handed out the last of these technical corrections, and let me just address that. The
yes.
Extended time revenue, the printouts have shown that going up $100 per pupil, and that's what I thought we'd had, but in the bill it turns out I'd had an old bad number of 146, so I apologize for that, and this sets that number to match what the expectation was and what's on the printout.
Okay, members, so this, again, is just being passed out now, and this is, again, a correction that Mr. Strom caught. So as you're receiving it, I would move to incorporate the A25 amendment into the 10-3 technical correction amendment, just so that all the technical corrections are made in the same proposal. Any questions about any of that. Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, custom in this House is that you allow an author to have the bill how they want it, whether you like it or not. And so I will be following with that custom and supporting your motion on this technical amendment, but particularly given the scheduling today, I do need to point out because you reminded me with the 1.8 through 1.11, the integration levy adjustments. This bill, as it leaves this body today, has more property tax increases for Minneapolis taxpayers than it has revenue for Minneapolis students. And when you couple that with the assault on Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth in the property tax division bill, my majority has chosen to ramp up property taxes in at least selected cities pretty dramatically. And I find that I recognize your target, but that target was a choice on the part of your leadership. Property taxes in this case are not a choice of the school district, they're a choice of this body. And when you're increasing property taxes more than you're increasing state aid, there's a problem with the approach to K-12 education. So, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would just like to point out that the inference that that we determine property taxes is somewhat connected, but a little disingenuous, in that at the local level is where property taxes are decided by the people who reside in those districts, whether it's county, city, or school district. So it'll be up to the school boards, it'll be up to the city, it'll be up to the county as to whether or not they raise their property taxes. Thank you.
All right. Any other comments on the 10-3 amendment? All right. If not, all in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. Thank you. It is adopted. All right. Next is also my amendment, the A13 amendment. And this pertains to the parent-child home program. Again, we heard testimony on this, and this bill was incorporated into the to the omnibus, but some language was inadvertently left out from the bill, which was House File 318.
Madam
so this
Chair.
Amendment just put it back in. Representative Hertas.
Thank you. Just a point of order. I think you wanted to act on adding the A25 amendment to the 10-3, and didn't we have to act on that and then act on the combined amendment?
Representative Hertas, I just incorporated that into the 10-3.
Thank you.
But thank you. All right, so I'm sorry, any questions on the A13 amendment? All right, seeing none, all in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, amendment is adopted. Thank you, members. Next is, I think, Representative Seltzer's amendment, A18. Having to do with the study abroad program and some changes to that language. Yes. If you'd like to go ahead and just describe your amendment.
Yes. Okay. I'd like to move the A18 amendment, and I will explain it. When I presented the K-12 Experience Abroad bill, Representative Newton made the suggestion that we include in the list of information required from programs to provide to the Secretary of State information on the insurance available to these students participating. So we have inserted that, and it has also been inserted in the Senate language. So on page 17, line 12, you see in the amendment that we do require the reporting of the terms and limits of the medical and accident insurance available to cover participating students and the process for filing a claim. And I also want to add that that is a requirement now for programs that bring students here. So it will also be aligned with that. The second part of the amendment deletes the directory information amendment starting on, portion starting on page 17, line 17.29. Representative Scott was kind enough to let me know that civil law might have some particular issues with the way it was worded, as we're dealing with public information here. So she graciously agreed to work with me over the interim so we can get some acceptable language to bring forward next year. And with that, that's my amendment, and I would stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Seltzer. Any questions on the amendment? All right, seeing none, all in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. A18 amendment is adopted. Representative Kreisha, would you like to offer your A12 amendment?
I would. And thank you, Madam Chair. And members, what the A12 amendment simply does is reflects the changes to the federal E-rate program. And with that, there's agreement between the Minnesota Department of Education and on behalf of the libraries to make sure that they can continue to get the funding, and those changes are reflected for their Category 1 and Category 2 services.
All right. Any questions on this amendment as Representative Kreisha has described it? All right. And it's my Representative Murphy, I'm sorry, I can't see you.
Madam Chair, I support this amendment, especially because of the cuts that broadband has taken in other places in the budget recommendations in other committees. And I think that the libraries have to be assisted in with their technology when more and more people are relying on that on a regular basis.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Representative Kreisha?
And thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Murphy, thank you for that. Yes, this is very important to make sure that we continue to get those services for the telecommunications. And I'll also say that there still is a broadband fight going on, and I'm still very hopeful that we'll continue to get that moving out in the rural areas. So, but thank you for your concern.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? All right. Seeing none, all in favor of the A12 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, A12 is adopted. Okay, so all of them?
Yes.
Representative, no amendments for you today? Okay. Okay, so Representative Dabney, we'll retrieve him for his amendment since we're getting through this maybe a little quicker than he had anticipated. Representative Mariani, A11.
Madam Chair, we heard this. This is from a bill authored by Representative Clark. Representative Chair Erickson gave us a good hearing on this just before the deadline. We heard some very good testimony about the issue that concerns Representative Clark and many of her constituents and communities across the state, particularly communities of color. Some of you may know that within the last year in Minneapolis alone, three or four young people drowned in Minneapolis. They were all young people of color. Star Tribune has done over the past couple of years some exposés about this, and what they find is that there's a pattern here that says, quite frankly, pretty much across the country with very low-income communities of color not having access to swimming facilities and swimming instruction, and the result then often being tragic results with young people not possessing the skills to be able to safely enter the water and enjoy it. Representative Clark's bill started out as a pretty aggressive bill with some mandates. You know, she clearly has an interest in having the state and locals invest in both facilities and instruction for swimming for young people of all races, but obviously, with a targeting for any of these communities. The bill then was scaled back to what we have here today, which is basically, quite simply, a request of the Minnesota Department of Education to both do an inventory of resources in the state relative to this issue, and to bring together a group of stakeholders to bring us recommendations about what we can be doing in partnership with our local school districts to address an important public health slash education concern and outcome for our young people. Madam Chair, I'm not much of a swimmer myself. I grew up in the inner city of Chicago. We had really no access to swimming pools. We had Lake Michigan, but that's not a good lake to learn how to swim. Unless you can handle the 5-foot waves that, that come at you constantly. Nonetheless, I was able, through that older school system that many years ago had invested in swimming pools and instruction support, to learn how to at least, you know, kind of keep my head above water. That unfortunately is less the case for many inner city students and small school districts where they don't have facilities for a pool, or frankly, don't have the money to maintain the pools that they have. It's expensive maintaining those. So I think this is a good amendment. I think the department wants to say a few words about this. It probably has to do with the cost that this will incur. I'm acknowledging that there would be a cost to the department. I don't think it's significant. However, frankly, Madam Chair, given the fact that our bill takes a pretty sizable whack at the department, I think anything that we would add, in all fairness, just being very transparent here, would certainly be an additional burden to the department that we would be underfunding. Nonetheless, I think it's important for us to move forward with this policy, bring that to study recommendations, and see what we can do about this really important issue in many of our communities across the state.
Thank you. And I will ask the department to come forward. I did have a discussion with them about this, and I will say Representative Clark did bring this to me, and I discussed it with her on the floor, and what the content of our conversation was that if this could be done at no additional cost to the agency, I would be amenable, but it's my understanding that is not the case. And I, you know, my target is depleted, as you may understand. So, Mr. Uni, I know, and you and I talked about this today, and I know you've had conversations with Representative Clark. So, if you could please just maybe offer perspective from the department on this at this point.
Of course. Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Adosh Uni, Director of Government Relations at the Department of Education. And yes, I was able to talk with the chair today and with Representative Mariani and with Representative Clark yesterday to explain the barriers that face the department in absorbing something like this. Last year, we were tasked with doing a survey on career and technical education equipment and classes and teacher shortages, and we were appropriated $100,000 for that survey. It was a lot of staff hours communicating with schools around the state to acquire that information. In the swimming instruction bill, there is not only a requirement for the department to conduct a survey of resources, but it's also of best practices. And that would require some analytical capabilities from the department. And as I've explained to some members, including the chair and Representative Clark, the department doesn't have a physical education expert. And so that might require some extra, if we were to do this right with the intent of the author, it would require some extra resources to be able to conduct that survey as the bill intends.
Thank you, Mr. Oni. Questions? Representative Mariani.
Well, Madam Chair, not a question, just a brief statement and acknowledgement. I think the department is correct that this is going to cost them. We certainly have the prerogative in the legislature to instruct our departments that there are some things that are so important to us that they just simply have to absorb that cost. You will see lots of those provisions manifest in a number, in pretty much all our bills that will be hitting the floor in the next week or so. Sometimes that happens with departments, you know, acknowledging and basically saying they're okay with it, and sometimes it happens with the opposite, you know, with some fierce resistance. I do want to acknowledge that, as I stated earlier, Madam Chair, you know, this bill takes a pretty aggressive swipe at the department's administrative appropriations. If I'm correctly with my numbers, something on the order of $8 million over the course of the next biennium. That's huge. And so I do acknowledge that on top of that, and I'm not supporting that effort, on top of that I'm asking them to absorb this small cost. You know, members, this is a matter of life and death, you know, as simple as that. And I think that there are times when, you know, we do what we have to do. We reach deep and we get very creative to be able to respond to issues that have a high stake like this one has. I mean, literally involving the possibility of young people, especially young people of color, or very low income, and whether or not they'll be the next drowning victim in Minnesota. And so I leave it to the committee. I wanted to offer this opportunity to for us to consider this, and I would urge your strong support.
Well, thank you, Representative Mariani. And I, you know, I do understand the importance of this issue and gathering this information. But I honestly, yes, we are, it's not $8 million, but it's about a 10%, so about, what, $3.5 million cut from the agency. Certainly not insignificant in terms of trying to put as much money as we could on the per pupil formula with the target that we had to work with. And so I am very reticent to force this task force and this additional work on the agency without funding to follow it. I would be more than willing to explore the idea of either a legislative commission to work on gathering this information or other avenues in doing this and working with yourself or Representative Clark, and maybe we could figure out another resolution by the time the bill gets to the floor. But I, unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to support an amendment just to force this on the department without money to pay for it at this point. Other questions or comments? Representative Murphy, you look like you maybe want to say something.
I maybe do, but maybe don't. I've just thought of several other things. I know in my district, all schools don't have swim, and in part of the area that I come from, there is many children that don't learn swimming through the school districts. Some school districts have contracts with park and recreation boards or with the YMCAs to teach kids swimming kind of things. And I think so the sole responsibility shouldn't be with the Department of Education. It should be how we're delivering safe swimming to all children in the state. And if that's a responsibility of the school districts or not, that should be part of the discussion, I think. And I kind of like your suggestion, and Mr. Withers and I was having a conversation about past successes with committees or work groups that have been formed in the past, at least over the summer interim, with staff and legislators working together to find out exactly what we would want to do or what needs to be done and what information has to be found out about. And so I think more people could be served with more possibilities considered for safe, every kind of experience for the students, but especially for safe swimming experiences for children in our schools and in the school program as well as outside of the school program, if we had kind of a work group before we had all these things. But that's just some thoughts I have.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Other comments? Questions? Representative Mariani? Anything else you want to say, or
well,
I guess we'll
Chair,
just move to
a vote. I think our goal is to try to get through this committee hearing with our amendments. I do have someone here from South Minneapolis, a mother who has been part of a tragic experience within her community involving this, and that has made her a strong advocate for these kind of proposals. You know, I have a great YMCA in my community as well, and we're working with them to try to expand opportunities for swimming in the west side of St. Paul. But, you know, frankly, members, this shouldn't come down to whether or not low-income kids have a Y in their neighborhood. What we do have are lots of pools across our state that are closed and shuttered right now. That was the testimony we heard last year in my committee when we heard a version of this bill. We invested in those facilities with public dollars, and we really ought to find a way to get back to offering this life-saving educational opportunity for our young people in Minnesota. And so, I leave it to the committee. I understand what we're dealing with finances, but there are creative things that we can do as we keep moving the process forward. I would ask to put this on the bill right now. We'll figure out when we go conference how we'll deal with this issue. And in the meantime, we certainly have the ability to tell the department that this is just something that it's important enough for us that they need to absorb and do it. I'll ask for your support.
Thank you. All right. Well, and I'll, just to reiterate, unfortunately, I'm not able to support the amendment in the form it's written, but I will make publicly my commitment to working with you, to Representative Clark, Representative Murphy, and maybe pursuing an avenue, whether it be a working group or a legislative commission or something, that we could start to have a full discussion about this, the resources that are there, and what the barriers are for making sure that children learn the life-saving skill of swimming. And I, you know, a little bit of background sharing. My summer job for 5 years between high school and when and college, through my college years, including the year after I graduated, was teaching swimming lessons and lifeguarding. So I know how important it is, and it's actually something that I really love to do, is teaching swimming to kids, especially those that had a fear of the water. So it's really important, and so you have my commitment that we'll continue to work on this. With that, if there aren't any other questions, we'll go ahead to a vote on the amendment. All in favor of the A11 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
All right, amendment does not pass. Thank you. Representative Dabney, thanks for coming back. The A22 amendment?
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the A22 to be before the committee. Madam Chair, this is a issue you and I spoke about yesterday. In your bill, you establish extended support revenue and change the existing program slightly. This, I would argue, is a clarification that you can use this revenue for vacation, what is termed in the amendment, vacation break academies. Minneapolis recently had spring break, same time the legislature did. I was in Florida. My kids came with me. At the same time, 3,000 Minneapolis students were in a spring break academy. It's one of the strategies, extended learning time. It's one of the strategies, particularly the power of that one, inside the school year that Minneapolis is deploying to close the achievement gap. I think the intent was that they would be able to use this. This simply then is clarifying language, I hope. And with that, I'd ask for everyone's support.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. And I do support the amendment. It's our intent, and we believe that the language in the bill would cover this, but this will just make it absolutely clear. So I'd be happy to support your amendment.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions? All right. With that, all in favor of the A22 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. A22 is adopted. And you have the next one, A7.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A7 before the amendment and see if my luck holds. Madam Chair, this relates to the language regarding the seals of biliteracy. This is Representative Norton's work over the last several years. You were good enough to include it in the omnibus. This clarifies that the intent would be that the important change in the test and the acknowledgement that we set the rigorous bar a little too rigorous and a little too high, that students in school this year would be able to use the new test envisioned in the bill. And again, we want rigorous standards, but we want them to be achievable. And this is a little comfort language. It allows the schools to go back to the kids and say, you can do this year. And keep in mind that they are limited to a three-year window after they complete the test, regardless of when they take the test, before they can apply to MinSCU for the credits. And this does not change that provision.
Thank you. Any questions or comments? All right. I did have just a little discussion with us about the staff. Do you foresee any problems with this taking effect during the current school year, given the fact that we may not have a bill into law for another month or so with the school year coming? Or
Madam Chair, fair question. I think actually the advantage is sending this message out to students now. This, as I perceive it, is a non-controversial provision in the bill. I would expect, regardless of when we manage to pass a K-12 bill and get the governor's signature, this provision will be in that bill. But this allows districts to go to students now and say, legislature's got your back. You've got some skills that are of value. We're willing to work with you. Seal on your high school diploma, credits at MinSCU, and a conversation with the university.
Okay. All right. With that, I don't see any other questions or comments. All in favor of the A7 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. A7 is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm quitting while I'm ahead.
All right. Let's see. So I'm making sure. So Representative Slocum, no amendments for you. And Representative Newton?
No.
Okay. Representative Mariani, A13.
Madam Chair, I would move the A13 amendment.
All right, Representative Mariani moves the A13 amendment.
And Madam Chair, if with your permission, I'd like to ask the department to come forward. Basically, Madam Chair, this would replace the language currently in the bill regarding our student assessment framework. Quite simply, the number and types of tests that we would expect, and changes made to that with the governor's proposal. What I want them to do is just explain quickly and they did this earlier in a committee that we had here, to explain quickly what the type of tests are that that they're proposing be eliminated, and what would replace that and why. The other thing this amendment does is it backs out of the majority's position here relative to making the ACT an optional issue. Quite frankly, members, it's really important. I think this is right. I'll make sure I'll check with my staff that, or our staff, that that this says this. But the ACT issue has to do with making sure that universally we're expecting the college readiness standard, and not making that a targeted opportunity and or an optional opportunity for students. So members, Madam Chair, with your permission, if I could ask the department just to quickly walk through their framework for the testing proposals that differ from what's in the bill currently.
Yes. Mr. McHenry.
Madam Chair, members, again, Kevin McHenry, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Education. Just responding as try to do a quick overview as what Representative Mariani had asked about the governor's proposal, and there are some similarities in the bill that you are moving forward. Again, the work on the governor's proposal and your proposal comes off of our testing reduction task force, where we brought together professionals in the education community, business community, and higher ed to really have a discussion of what we can do to actually reduce testing in classrooms. The recommendations from the task force, which are included in the governor's proposal, and they're included in your proposal as well, it's eliminating the explore, it's eliminating the plan, which are in the compass, which are our college and career readiness exams in preparation for the ACT. Those were recommendations from the task force. The task force did recommend that the use of the explore and plan for predictability on a college entrance exam should be embedded in the MCAs, and that's how we are building our assessments. The in addition, the language in the governor's bill still does require a career interest survey, which would be given to students in 8th and 10th grade or after 8th grade, to make sure that they're measuring what it is the students' interests are as they're preparing for life beyond high school. Further, there are further reductions in the MCAs, which would require a waiver from the federal government. It gets rid of the third and fourth grade math exam and makes those optional. The idea on that is that would provide per grade about an hour and a half to 2 hours of freedom from testing to be spent maybe more on literacy, as there is a big focus on early literacy and how that is linked to performance in education later on. The proposal also does, it gets rid of the mandatory reading exam in fifth and sixth grades. We still would actually build the tests and have that provided as options, but again, it would not be a requirement for the students to take. That would provide about per grade about 3.5 to 4.5 hours freedom from testing time. Again, it would be up to the districts to decide if they'd like to use that as an optional test, or if there are other exams, or if they would actually focus on interventions for specific categories. The proposal does require the ACT for graduation. We feel this is very important. It sets a high bar for all students. All students do have to plan for how they would prepare for life beyond high school. And this test, the ACT or the college or what or SAT, with the specifically this is the ACT, but this really means a lot to students and what they are doing beyond high school. This proposal also includes a college and career readiness indicator in fifth, eighth, and high school. And the indicator is a composite score indicator of reading, math, and science. Again, when you look at the reductions in the bill, you would have reading, math, and science in fifth grade and eighth grade, and then in high school. And the idea behind that would be is that you could provide some guidance early on where a student is at and how a student is preparing to perform on an ACT. And it also would be something helpful to have as a composite score as districts are putting forth their world's best workforce plan. So again, that's the proposal in a nutshell. This is something that obviously that we look forward to continue working on. We do feel that there are significant amounts of high stakes tests. We are looking for ways to reduce that while still having the measurements needed to help students, to help teachers, and help show how schools are performing. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make sure I'm not misspeaking. I think, and I may ask staff for help here, I think my amendment does keep the current approach to the ACT test as is. So I'm just going to ask, I'm going to dial on staff for some help with that. But while staff looks that through, the wisdom of the governor's proposal, members, really has to do with making sure that we're focusing up front on literacy. You all know that math proficiency really rests on a foundation of literacy. And so, you know, this is really good literature research supported effort on the part of the department that really fronts on our literacy focus. And then in the later years really ramps up our assessment attention relative to math. And the net result, members, is that you're going to have three less MCAs. Now, I know that there are three less tests that are represented in the language before us. Quite frankly, that's also in this amendment. Those three less tests have to do with those suite of assessments that we unfortunately can't carry out because the vendor has compromised or withdrawn those instruments. So in other words, no matter what we did, we would wind up with three less tests there anyway. The issue here really has to do with responding to this concern with quote-unquote overtesting. The governor's proposal is really a much more assertive, aggressive posture relative to that, but does so in a very responsible way by staging the literacy components assessments the way they do, and then followed up with the math and science assessments. I think it's a really smart way for us to proceed, and I would urge your support of it.
Any questions for Mr. McHenry while he's there? Right. Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Mr. Commissioner, can you, do you want to comment on the radio program yesterday that talked about the breakdown in the Pearson testings in Minnesota?
Mr. McHenry.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, I will comment on that. We had an issue with signing into our MCAs. The program we have is through our vendor, which is Pearson. And so there's an issue when teachers, we had an issue where the server of Pearson went down for the porthole where teachers are signing in students, or the district assessment coordinators are signing their students in to test. So there was an issue with the server going down. Pearson had to restart another server that didn't that worked, but it was a slower process for districts signing in to test. So there was an issue. It was actually the day before yesterday, and there were some issues with rebooting that server yesterday that had two short 5-minute slowdowns in signing in. Once students were signed in through Pearson Access, the program they go through is Test Nav, and there were no issues as far as students testing in the testing atmosphere, in the online testing atmosphere. The results were being reported. There was no interruption in their service. Where the issue was they actually signing in to actually access that Test Nav program so the students could test. So this is an issue that we immediately heard about. We communicated with districts. We also communicated with Pearson on how to actually address the issue and fix the issue. Pearson, at the time frame, they did have a backup server that was a little bit slower. They worked in the evening to upgrade that server. And at the same time, what we asked for them to do, and they responded by providing extra technical assistance to districts, an extra phone time. So as districts were trying to figure out a way to work around the sign-in issue, they had more individuals at Pearson that were working with districts to actually get them signed into the porthole. So unfortunately, yes, there was a glitch, but we have worked closely with Pearson to address it. Pearson is still working with districts today. Again, we've had it was a slowdown in signing in, and Pearson has upgraded their server and support. I do want to make sure I do make a comment that the server going down impacted all states, so it wasn't just something that impacted. It wasn't an issue that just impacted Minnesota, and unfortunately, it was something that we had to that maybe prevented students from signing into testing at a specific time. But it is something that we have addressed, and we're continuing monitoring with Pearson.
Madam Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Then did all the students that were supposed to take the test yesterday take the test or day before yesterday? Did they all get time and take the test, and the tests are all sent on their way through the wherever?
Mr. McHenry.
And Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, the students that signed in were able to take the tests. Again, we do have a window of about 2 months to take the tests. We have asked for numbers from Pearson as far as how many students logged in and how many students finished. Every day when every week we get updates on students that have logged in to test, who started and how many have finished. They don't necessarily always finish on the same day, so we're trying to work with Pearson to see how many that impacted. I can't really give you a specific answer of how many students that impacted, but it did impact some students trying to go into test, and some were unable to test. Pearson did work as quick as they could to fix the issue, so they could actually get back in, sign in, and actually take the test.
And Madam Chair, I just wonder, in all this, did the test result for the child stay the same, and is Pearson going to analyze that? And what about the computer lab where they had to go and take, and now are they going to have the computer lab shut down for another week to all the rest of the kids because these kids have to make up and these kids are behind? It just sounds so frustrating on a day-to-day basis where the teacher and the students and the parents have no control, and yet this big place does, and then we get the analysis and who knows what. Oh, it just expires me.
And Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, and members, this is something that it worries us as well, and that's why we're working so closely with Pearson and holding them accountable to their contract to make sure they are delivering what they need to deliver. You raise some great points. Obviously, there are districts that do have to reorganize schedules. There's districts that only have a specific amount of time in testing labs, and we do know that that causes some complications. And again, we are working with Pearson as much as we can, so Pearson is working with districts to actually solve the issue to not let this happen again.
Thank you. Right. Well, Representative Mariani, I appreciate, I think, the spirit in which you're offering this, and certainly this is reflects what the department and the governor has put forward. But I'm going to oppose your amendment, and I actually like what we have in the bill better. And just a couple of things in the discussion. Much of what has been proposed in that, there was discussion about the federal requirement, and the waiver wasn't granted. So. There is not the available flexibility to skip some of those MCAs in grades 3 through 8. So that's just really not a possibility right now. I understand that the plan and the explore tests, are no longer products that go away, but unless we remove that requirement in our statutes, that means the department's going to have to find something else to replace them. So that won't be any reduced testing because that's still in our statutes and required. And then finally, with regards to the ACT, the mandatory ACT that the state will pay for all students, I think, given the high rate of participation in that college entrance exam in Minnesota, I actually think the proposal that we've come up with in our bill gets to the goal of ensuring that all students are doing that, but we're targeting that through a reimbursement to the schools to make sure that children who can't pay for that, we will do that and provide an opportunity to make sure every junior or senior takes that. And in doing that approach, we reduce the cost of it, and we also can reduce some of the disruption that is caused from an additional day of testing. Right now, our high schools are basically having to find something to do with their, 9th, 10th, and 12th graders while all their juniors take the ACT on the same day when many of them have either already taken it or are scheduled to take it later. So I think this is a way that not only maximizes student learning time, but also just kind of gets to addressing the purpose, if you will, of making sure that regardless of economic resources, we're going to make sure that every one of our 11th or 12th graders gets an opportunity to take that college entrance exam. So. Representative Bennett, that is your bill, and so I would like you to share any comments you have.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to add a couple things. First, I echo what you say about the ACT, and I just don't believe it's necessary for all students. And I heard that actually from a number of superintendents in my own school districts in 27A, as well as from other superintendents and special ed directors, that assessment is burdensome for them. It's actually expensive for them. And even for special ed kids, it's an extremely stressful assessment being timed for the autism type kids and so on. So I just heard a lot of things from school districts that it's not necessary for all students to take that. And so I do believe that what we have in our current bill meets the needs of our school districts and our students for that area. And just want to add one more thing, Representative Mariani. I agree with you that we need to look further at how we can maybe even get rid of more assessments at some of those lower grade levels. I just feel like right now is not the time. As a teacher, I found very often that mandates from the government would swing drastically from one side to another, and I don't want to do this to schools right now. I feel like we've moved the bar about here. Let's see how that goes, and then I'd love to work with you in the future on seeing what other assessments and with the board of teaching and so on, and with schools to see what other assessments we could eliminate and still maintain our rigor and the information that we need. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Other comments? Representative Mariani?
Well, Madam Chair, first of all, I just want to say I appreciate the spirit in which the amendment is being proposed. I don't agree with the arguments, but I do appreciate the spirit. I think that's the kind of careful deliberation that we need to be able to have. I do think this is a better approach, however. And before I say anything more, I want to make sure I ask, get on right, I want a roll call on this. You know, Representative Murphy raised a number of questions, and, you know, a number of us were sort of giggling about it because sort of almost the absurdity of, you know, what could happen in a school setting relative to, you know, this heavy focus on year-to-year-to-year standardized assessments. It is, in fact, disruptive. I mean, if we're really concerned about maximizing classroom time, I think what the governor has proposed is an intelligent way in which we can strike a balance relative to our interest in having standardized assessment results with, you know, our main interest, which is to make sure that students are receiving instructional, are engaged in instructional time. So I think we have the right balance here. I was unclear about the waiver issue. I thought that this would fit within the relationship that we currently have with the federal government, and so perhaps, Madam Chair, with your indulgence, the department could just be real clear about that issue. And while the department comes up, well, they're up there. Maybe they can just be clear about that issue, and then I'll finish my comments.
Mr. McHenry, to the waiver issue.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, again, the language in the bill would, it does require that we would get a waiver from the federal government or an update from our current waiver from the federal government to actually reduce those specific tests. So that's something that on a federal level, they are having a conversation as far as reauthorization of ESEA, and there has been some discussion regarding the amount of testing and what's the appropriate time period. So with legislation, we would request a waiver for these specific tests. We wouldn't necessarily be able to reduce those until we had approval, but we felt it was a really good time, as the federal government is having that discussion, that Minnesota would be able to be in a position to help inform that discussion, and that by proposing these reductions, this would be something that the federal government could consider moving forward, as this is part of their overall conversation.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Murray.
Thank you. That clarifies for me. I think then, therefore, the proposal before you, members, is a responsible one. Obviously, if the federal government says no, then we can't do this. And that's a topic for another discussion, which I suspect there'll be strong bipartisan agreement on. On the ACT issue, you know, Madam Chair, members, we either have high expectations of our young people or we don't. And the whole college, or the whole career and college readiness movement, is about driving a culture of high expectations for all students. Will there be students who struggle through this assessment or any other assessment? Yes, of course. Will there be students that will rise as a result of that expectation? Literature and our experience tells us that that's true as well. You know, currently it's a small benefit to Minnesota families, but it's a benefit to Minnesota families. I don't know why we would take away the benefit of the costs incurred to families. I appreciate the targeting effort. I think that's an appropriate investment. But currently, all Minnesota families are able to have this benefit conferred upon them for the sake of their children's education and for the sake of the state. I don't know why we would take that away. So, Madam Chair, with that, I'll look forward to the vote.
Thank you. Any other comments? All right. So, with that, Representative Mariani has requested a roll call vote. So, the clerk will call the roll on the A13 amendment.
Excuse me, Madam Chair.
Representative Bennett.
Did Representative Dabney want to be here for roll calls or doesn't that matter? I don't know.
I hope so.
I would imagine they'll go find him,
okay.
Representative Bennett.
All right.
So. All right. The clerk will call the roll.
Representative Loon?
No.
Representative Krisha?
No.
Representative Murphy?
Yes.
Representative Anderson?
No.
Representative Anzel?
Yes.
Representative Bennett?
No.
Representative Christensen?
No.
Representative Dabney? Representative Detmer?
No.
Representative Erickson?
No.
Representative Fenton?
No.
Representative Hertas?
No.
Representative Mariani?
Yes.
Representative Marquardt?
Yes.
Representative Mullery?
Aye.
Representative Newton?
Aye.
Representative Norris? Representative Peterson?
No.
Representative Huam?
Nay.
Representative Seltzer?
Yes.
Representative Slocum?
Yes.
Representative Wills?
Representative Murphy, do you anticipate your missing members coming? Should we hold the vote for a minute, or are you okay if we close it?
I think we'll close it.
All right. We will close the vote. And the count is?
8 aye, 12 nay, 2 absent.
All right. So 8 aye and 12 nay, the amendment is not adopted.
Patience is a virtue. What can you guys cancel?
Okay.
Right to the end.
Members, the next amendment we'll take up will be the A21. Oh, it's my amendment. Didn't see that coming. So the A21 amendment is actually, it's part of a larger plan that I've been trying to put together, and Representative Loeffler came to me with the same idea. And what we're trying to accomplish here is to get the word out about the scholarship program to those kids that we've been targeting. And we've been trying to find a good way to get the Department of Education and DHS to interact, because the data sits in the Department of Human Services, and the Department of Ed doesn't always have access to that, and sometimes it's not as clear as we'd like. So what this amendment is going to do is we're going to allow county human service agencies working with families eligible for basic sliding fee child care program to be notified by the county the county must send out to that list and notify those families that the scholarship program is available. And one thing that I'd like to do here is I'd like to take up an oral amendment, if you'd allow, and that is in line 1.6 where it says must, annually must, I'd like to change that to may. And the reason for that, if you'll indulge me on this, is because I want to give counties the option to do this, but I also believe the commissioner of DHS may be stepping up to help out as well. So what I'd actually like to do, because many of our counties, especially in the rural areas, this may only be 50 or 70 families, or might even be less, so they may just take this on. But the DHS has the complete list of about 7,000, and in a conversation with them, they may take this on as well. So what I'm trying to do is accomplish this from both angles and not push costs down to many of our rural counties that might not be ready for it with personnel or with mailing costs and so forth. The one disadvantage that we have to our counties is if we push this down and ask them to do this, there's 87 counties. And so it could be done 87 different ways. Whereas if I can keep this at the department, I may be able to have a concerted effort. So I guess the first thing I'd ask, if it's okay, if you would accept the oral amendment of changing must to may. So we'll make that adjustment from must to may. And any discussion on the amendment? Representative Anzels.
Minnesota's delivery of social services is state supervised and county administered, which means counties already have loads of discretion about how it is they communicate with clients. I think this is a good idea, but I would hope as this goes forward that it can be strengthened a little bit more by some language that I don't have at the tip of my tongue right now, but some language that can more strongly require the commissioner of the Department of Human Services to supervise those county agencies in such a way that the county agencies know that this is a state priority. So I support your amendment. I think it's a good idea, but in the practical world, it may require a little refinement.
And thank you for that, Representative Anzels. And the reason I'm changing this, I absolutely agree with you. Part of this is just timing. We have about five conversations going on, and the intent is to send the red flag up that, hey, we're moving in this direction, we'd like to do this, but to make sure that we have these so we don't, as you know down here, we're working with squirrels. We don't want big movements here. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
That's for sure.
I didn't know we were going to get into squirrel issues, but I'm wondering why you're saying just the people on the waiting list, because BSF does not cover everything, and there are many families on BSF that can't get a quality program without the scholarship. So I believe that as I didn't notice this, and so unless it was agreeable to everybody, but I'm concerned about the waiting list because I think it should apply to everybody on BSF, because those families that are getting BSF but can't get a good program without the scholarship should also be notified of their ability to use it. So I hope you'll work with that as we go on.
And Representative Mullery, absolutely. In fact, Ms. Larson did a great job yesterday of drafting this with about 2 minutes to spare to get the conversation going. And part of this is to go back and to refine this. We still have a floor stop, and we have a conference committee and a Senate conversation. So all of that is in for discussion. And as you know, you and I have talked, and I'll absolutely come to you and talk through this.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Among other eligible families,
You want to read that? Yep. Representative Mullery, Ms. Larson has a quick change that we might even be able to take this further.
Mr. Chair, I don't think it's quite perfect yet, but Ms. Larson came very good, and so I think if you'll accept that, I'm certainly.
I'm going to have you read.
I think that would help, and then we can refine the.
And so, members, Representative, working with Ms. Larson, she has some language that we're going to put forth, and then we're going to ask you to accept that as an oral. And it sounds like it's amenable to you. It looks like it's fine to me. So if you'd read the amendment.
Mr. Chair, members, on the H0844A21 amendment, Representative Cresha has asked to incorporate a change must to may on 1.6 of the amendment. And in addition, after the first comma, insert among other eligible families, comma. And I think this captures at least conceptually the idea that other eligible families would also be subject to notice with this provision.
And Mr. Chair,
Mr. Representative Mullery,
it's not quite what I wanted on that, but she also caught something that I hadn't thought of, and I had thought of it, but then didn't speak it, okay. Which is even ones that are on the MFIP part of it. It's good to notify them of this right.
Ms. Larson?
She did a much better job of
okay.
Getting everybody.
Ms. Larson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mullery, members, consistent with Representative Cresha's expressed intent to try to refine this idea as the provision goes forward, both with hopes of addressing the issue at the State Department of Human Services level as well as the county level. This simply acknowledges that there are other eligible families, and perhaps the authors and other interested members can better articulate specifically who those eligible families might be as this provision goes forward, if I understand the intent of the members in this conversation.
And thank you, Ms. Larson. And if it's okay, let's take the language as it is here, and then we'll continue the conversations and make sure that we refine this. If you're okay with that?
However you want.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I think you should take the language as it's written, as it was originally printed on 821, because if I remember, and I was involved in the first discussions with Representative Loeffler. and that was, she knew that the county she deals with has the lists of the names, the addresses of the names of the eligible families. And that's why she chose the mail route, the send a letter kind of thing. These other eligible lists, I'm not sure that those counties have those addresses, and so at least let it get as far as they have addresses for now and are willing to send those letters.
And Representative Murphy, I appreciate that. Wise words. So actually what I'll encourage us to do is to go back to the amendment, change the must to may, leave it at that, and then I'll have the next set of conversations,
yes.
And we'll put this together. And to your point, I need to go back to Representative Loeffler just out of the spirit of the process that we had, and that would be the right thing to do. So, Representative Mullery, are you okay with that? I mean, I think we'll get there.
Mr. Chair, I think our intent is the same. I happen to disagree with my leader that...
it's not the first
time. I didn't say that, but... I still think we need the MFIP people and everything else in it, and the county certainly has their list because they send them checks all the time. So I think we're on the same page, Mr. Chair, and just work together as we go on. So I don't care what the language is right now, as long as we have your commitment.
Okay. Any other further discussion? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Cresha. Representative Mullery, you have a wise leader.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Amendment carries.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Krisha. Representative Mariani, you've got another amendment, A-17.
I'm sorry, I moved the A-17 amendment.
All right. Mariani moves, Representative Mariani moves the A-17 amendment. Two-year amendment, Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I'm hoping that third time's a charm here. I spoke about this issue briefly yesterday. So, Madam Chair, this would remove from the bill the sections related to the Achievement and Integration Minnesota program. And I'll quickly just repeat what I said yesterday, that I think it's unseemly for us as a body to take this action at this point in time because we've had absolutely no conversation about this program, these statutes throughout this entire session. And it seems to me that we should have had that. We can certainly agree to disagree on how to approach this work. But frankly, not having the ability to interact with our school districts, with our integration districts, with the individuals that work across the state, it's not a good practice on our part. What this language does currently in the bill, as I read it, it would basically have the state of Minnesota walk away from its commitment to racial integration of our schools. It would do that and not only walk away from racial integration, but frankly walk away from our historic, many decades commitment a few years following the Brown v. Board decision in the 50s. To prevent the racial segregation of our schools. The bill does this, or the language does this, in a number of ways, and one way is that it separates out the academic achievement focus from the racial integration focus. This was really at the core wisdom of the bipartisan task force that when your party was last in majority put into play and asked, I presume in good faith, that it come back with a recommendation for redesigning or eliminating the integration revenue program. As I shared yesterday, in a surprising, and frankly, I was surprised. I was one of the six Dems that was on that committee, and if I were a betting guy, I would have bet that we would have come back totally hung on this issue. But there was an amazing process that committee embarked on for about a year, which involved heavy interactions with local leaders, practitioners, educators in Minnesota, but also with national thought leaders from across the nation. And we heard from folks all across the ideological spectrum. We dove really deep into the best, research-based literature that existed in the time at that time. And at the end, on a 10-to-1-to-1 vote, the task force came back and said, this is worth saving. There is a compelling state interest on the part of Minnesota to work at racial integration in our schools and to prevent racial segregation. And so, Madam Chair, quite frankly, with not more than 5 minutes of discussion that we first had yesterday, we're going to radically redesign the wisdom that group took a year to bring us, and did so through a very open, transparent, involved, inclusive process. Madam Chair, this morning as I was driving over, I was listening to NPR, And they're doing a series on hate in America. And I think it's Morgan Freeman. It sure sounds like him, the actor Morgan Freeman. He has a very distinctive voice, as you know, is the moderator or the presenter of this program. And I was struck, because I knew we would have this quick discussion here today, that it just so happened, as I was pulling up to the state capitol, that they were featuring a young man who had been a skinhead. So he was a white supremacist. Grew up in inner city of Philadelphia, low-income kid, very susceptible to hate messaging and recruiting, and was recruited by a group of older teenagers who were part of a formalized skinhead movement in Philadelphia. The short of that story is that he's no longer a skinhead after doing both juvie and adult time in prison for hate crimes, where he hurt people. He got his first job out of prison. He was hired by a Jewish merchant. And the Jewish gentleman hired him even though this young man had a swastika tattooed onto his neck. It's an incredible story. I encourage you to check it out because they archive these. That relationship transformed him to the point where he has loving respect for this older gentleman who gave him this opportunity, a Jewish gentleman. He's had the swastika, no doubt painfully, removed from his neck. And when asked about his, what's kind of the lesson learned, what do you want the world to know, he quite simply said that the way to overcome hate is to create opportunities for people who are different from one another to interact with one another. And that's what it took for him. As long as he was isolated and alienated, hanging out with his white supremacist buddies, it was perfectly okay for him to think and act the way he thought and acted relative to the people who were not white in this society. And then that transformative moment when he had this interaction with this this gentleman who treated him fairly and kindly, it was a powerful transformative moment. That is critically, I would submit to you, an important outcome of our public education system in our democracy. And why we would now adopt a posture where essentially in this language, those opportunities really become optional. They become deprioritized. They're still mentioned. But the state's not going to put its money in on it. It's going to be left to the ability and the willingness of locals to levy to be able to pay for the racial integration expectations and outcomes, and actually there are probably less expectations and more wishes that we would have by virtue of this language. Why we would do that in a diverse society as ours is really beyond me. And the wisdom of this group was, and Representative Hertaus, mentioned this, maybe 6 weeks ago, where he, and I don't take umbrage, I suspect he just wasn't informed, misrepresented the integration program as one that's been an utter failure in our state. And he was partially right in that what we wrestled with, honestly, in a bipartisan manner, was whether or not integration efforts should have at their core two equally important things. The outcome that I shared just now by characterizing the story that I did, but also strong academic outcomes. And the wisdom of this group was to say that the two are not mutually exclusive, and in fact, they can be, if done a certain way, actually reinforce one another. That is the bold vision that we laid out just a short 2 years ago in state statute. Really puts us, I think, like many other things, Madam Chair, in our country, on the leading edge of good, sound public policy. And here, without you know, any discussion, we're going to fritter that away. To what end, I still don't know. And so I ask you to honestly wrestle with this issue and honor the work of that bipartisan group. Remove this language at this point. Madam Chair, I will certainly work with you and Chair Erickson to schedule and arrange for deeper discussions where we can become better informed as Minnesota representatives on this important juncture between racial integration and academic achievement. I think you'll be surprised. I think you'll be surprised the stories that young people will tell you about their experiences of hungering for knowledge, at least partly based on this commitment that people, young people across races make with one another in order to learn more about one another. So, Madam Chair, I'm not going to ask for a roll call on this. I leave it to your good conscience. You know, quite frankly, I don't think this proposal is going to be in law by the end of this year. Unfortunately, what it does do is send a real wrong message to Minnesotans about what we value relative to racial integration and racial equality. I'd ask you to think carefully and to support the amendment, and let's get on with other work in this bill.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. Representative Anzels, you had your hands up, but I know Representative Erickson's being asked in Property Tax Committee, so do you mind if she speaks quickly before she has to run out the door? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Mariani, for your comments. And I know you have a grave concern about some of the changes that we're suggesting here. I was a part of the group for some of the time. And as I recall in the discussions, and I think that's what we've tried to accomplish in these changes, is that closing the achievement gap was utterly important. At least it certainly was to the gentleman who sat around me at the table at our meetings. And therefore, you know, as we looked at the language in paragraph C, the delineation of how to use the revenue, we found ways that could be more specific to lay out opportunities for our teachers and staff to use with our children to close the achievement gap. So, you know, as I think about some of the comments that were made in at least the meetings of which I attended, I think that some of those, especially the men who sat near me from St. Cloud and from here in St. Paul, from our African-American community would agree that what we've done here is really offer something a little more specific to assist in closing the achievement gap in our itemized 2 through 8, and then to offer the levy as it would be different in every district to do then what is set down in clauses 1, 2, and 3, in that there we're concentrating on cultural fluency, social cohesion, interaction, and I think what we're doing here, and I hope this will pass muster when we get to conference committee, is really opening the door for something for districts to grab onto that will move our students who are caught up in this achievement gap toward achievement, as you have in the first word of the title of your transforming of Integration 8 into achievement and integration. So I'm hoping that we can work together, obviously, if it doesn't prevail in conference committee. But if it does, I think we have really offered something that is more substantive. And I think that many of the participants in the group in which I was a participant would welcome some of these ideas. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Anzels.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I really feel that continuing the discussion on this topic could really lead to all sorts of statements and all sorts of directions and so on. But I would just want you to know, and I would want the record to show, that as a really rural member, I am so confident that the citizenry in my rural area would most definitely stand with Representative Mariani's amendment and with virtually every word that he shared with us here today. I just think that what's in the bill is unnecessary and divisive, and I hope that you can support Representative Mariani's amendment.
Thank you, Representative Anzels, and Representative Mariani, again, I appreciate your very thoughtful comments and appreciate and understand your passion for and your leadership for the work that went into place on the changes that were made to the integration revenue and coming up with the Achievement Integration Revenue Fund and that. I think Representative Erickson very well delineated and spoke to some of the things that I would echo with regards to the importance of academic achievement and that for our students of color and how that is so important to them actually being fully integrated in our communities. Educational attainment for all of our children, I think, will go a long ways to making sure that we achieve racial equity in our communities, in our state. And so that was the spirit in which these changes were proposed. I appreciate you not asking for a roll call on this, and I will say I'm actually, because of the of your deleting all of it, including the changes that we made to the levy portion, if we delete that out, we have a target problem. And so I must rule your amendment out of order for that reason, because those monies were put into the formula, and so we then have a problem with our target if your amendment were to go on. So with that, I want to tell you that I will continue discussing this with you. We've got time until this goes to the floor. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, so it would be the intent of the Chair to rule the amendment out of order, and I think I understand the technical reason for that. I believe it has to do with the line 1.4, the deletion of Section 60. Am I correct?
Yes, Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I would move to divide the A17th Amendment, and I would ask for a vote on the first, and I would ask for the division to occur after or between lines 1.3 and 1.4, and I would ask for us to vote on the lines 1.1 to 1.3. And I would ask for a roll call for that, Madam Chair.
All right. And would you either repeat that or Mr. Strom, if you've got that, so we can make sure everybody is clear?
Madam Chair, members, Representative Mariani is moving to divide the amendment between lines 1.3 and 1.4 and vote on the first portion of the amendment. That would be line 1.3 to delete Section 59 of the bill.
And Madam Chair?
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, if I could phone a staff, then I just want to make sure that by doing that, the lines on 1.1 to 1.3 do not produce the, I just want to make sure whether they do or not, do not produce the fiscal disbalance issue that the Chair is concerned with.
Thank you.
Is that correct?
I believe so, but I'm going to consult with Mr. Strom just to ensure that I'm correct on that. Mr. Strom?
Madam Chair, yes.
Okay. Mr. Schramm indicates that is correct.
And Madam Chair, if I could speak to my amendment.
Yes, Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, very quickly, I would just say that I think the issues that Representative Erickson, Chair Erickson raised and that you echoed solidarity with are certainly worth discussion. I think they have merits on their own grounds. I do disagree with them. However, it's precisely the kind of conversation that we should have had throughout this legislative session. Representative Erickson referred to the gentlemen that were part of the task force. I know them well. Two of those African-American gentlemen were part of the majority decision that's presently in statute here. it would have been powerfully informative for us to have engaged them again, because we're still here in Minnesota, engaged them again relative to this language that no one has seen, you know, until this bill was unveiled yesterday. You know, on that alone, members, I would encourage you to vote on behalf of the first part of this amendment for our own integrity, for our own relationship with the public, commitment to transparency, and not to mention, you know, the honoring of the work that we asked Minnesotans to do, and they spent a year in which to do. Love to have a much deeper conversation about the intersection between race and academic achievement. You know, members, the achievement gap is about race. It's about race. You know, the achievement gap is a kind of neat shorthand language to say that our society does a miserable job in providing educational outcomes that are equal, commensurate with the resources that we put in with other students. We have a long history of miserable outcomes with Black students, with Latino students, with certain parts of the Asian community, with American Indian students, and frankly with other students that aren't typically considered under the Brown v. Board framework. We have been fighting this battle for over 200 years and, frankly, even longer. Minnesota has an intelligent, smart way to go about doing this. It came through a painful process of checking one another out in terms of challenging why academics were not embedded deeply into racially integrated efforts. It was tough work. And for us to dismiss those recommendations, you know, on a less than 24-hour, you know, notice to the public, it's just, frank members, it's on the one hand typical of Americans to continue to run away from this issue, you know, but it's also yet another lost opportunity if we were to move ahead with this. You had some brave Minnesotans, white, Black, Latino, Asian Minnesotans, American Indians, who came together, Republicans and Democrats, and came up with a better way for us to fulfill the American promise here in Minnesota relative to this issue. And for us to just dismiss it out of hand, it's, you know, it's both typical of a sad history of us as Americans. We have the power to stop doing that. We should always debate, Madam Chair. We should always explore whether it's the best approach, but we should do that in a real orderly, engaged process that's very inclusive and transparent. We don't have that right now. And so, you know, I guess I don't know what else to say, but I would urge you to support this amendment. We can certainly come back to this issue in the future. There continue to be issues relative to the funding. It was not my intent to be able to, or it was not my intent to dive into those. When we recrafted the integration program, you know, I did one of those rare things that legislators don't do. I took money away from my own school district. And I said, look, you know, this is so important that we need to make sure that these limited resources are spread out in a much more fair and equitable way across the state, to promote what is no longer just a St. Paul challenge, but is really a statewide challenge. And so, you know, both Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth school districts took a big chunk out of their then-current appropriations. This bill is only going to exacerbate that and then shift that expectation on to, you know, our local property tax taxpayers. But even without getting into that, members, I really implore you, don't do this. If we're going to do something like this, we should be much more deliberate and careful and much more honorable in going ahead with it. So I would urge your support for the first part of the A-17 amendment.
Further comments? All right. With that, the question is on the first part, first half of the A17 amendment, so up through line 1.3. And that, again, is the language changes to the achievement and integration for Minnesota program. All in favor, please say aye. I'm sorry. Did you ask for roll call? Okay. Roll call has been requested. The member will call the roll.
Representative Loon?
No.
Representative Kreisha?
No.
Representative Murphy?
Yes.
Representative Anderson?
No.
Representative Anzo?
Yes.
Representative Bennett?
No.
Representative Christensen?
No.
Representative Dabney?
Aye.
Representative Detmer?
No.
Representative Erickson?
No.
Representative Fenton?
No.
Representative Hertas?
No.
Representative Mariani?
Yes.
Representative Marquardt? Representative Mullery?
Aye.
Representative Newton?
Aye.
Representative Norris?
No.
Representative Peterson?
No.
Representative Quam?
No.
Representative Seltzer?
Yes.
Representative Slocum?
Yes.
Representative Wills? I have 8 aye, 13 nay, and 1 absent.
All right. The amendment is not adopted. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I would remove for consideration the second part.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. All right. So I think that addresses all of the amendments that had been filed, the ones that were not offered. And there was one I was going to offer discussion on the school trust plans. I'm not going to do that. That was more for discussion purposes. In the interest of time, we will not do that today. With that, Representative Murphy, shall we push through and maybe we can finish in a few minutes?
Yes,
very well. Representative Murphy, I'd like to recognize you for any comments you would like to make on the bill as amended.
Madam Chair, members, the document that you have before us is a document that many hours were spent on, much thought went into it. We preserved the base in the only possible way we could, and we made a few steps upward. But it does not show that education from the earliest child through high school graduation is the number one priority of the legislature of the state of Minnesota. It does not reflect the expectations that the people that came in January, February, and March and testified that they needed for their school districts to move on rather than catch up. Yesterday, we heard the words of dismantle, missed opportunities, disappointment. But more than anything, it does not meet the expectations that the people of Minnesota, the families and the children of Minnesota have in the Minnesota legislature. and therefore I don't recommend passage.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Other comments? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for your hard work, and to the committee as well, and to those who served on policy. I appreciate your input as well. I think what we have here on the policy side is really a great innovative piece. You know, we're allowing flexibility for our districts, but at the same time, keep in mind that we are streamlining the process to become licensed. If you have been trained in another state or you are licensed out of state, we are reducing testing. We're allowing for a new process that involves both a bargaining unit and a school board to figure out how to place our teachers on unrequested leave when that is necessary. We have numerous other innovations that I think empower parents, that empower teachers. In fact, we have Representative Peterson's teacher-powered school policy in here. And we are also giving students more opportunities to increase their learning, to go outside the regular classroom in the form of career and college courses and other opportunities. We are also looking specifically at American Indian children and trying to make sure that they have the opportunities they need, as well as all of our other children, to excel and to learn and to achieve. And so, Madam Chair, you know, I think with that said, and the finance pieces we have just a really great, innovative K-12 bill, and I thank you for it.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Crescia.
And thank you, Madam Chair, and what a pleasure it has been to serve next to you on this committee. And thank you for all your hard work. And to the members, thank you. We may not all agree, and as we heard yesterday, words like dismantle, disappointment. But to the many children that are going to receive a scholarship, we're not dismantling them. To those families, we're building them up. We're giving them a future. And I'm very proud to see this bill go forward and the amount of hard work. We may not agree that the targets are there. We may agree that there's some disappointment in some areas. But I think we have to acknowledge that with the proportional and the percentage increase of what was placed on the early learning and targeting those kids that really need a leg up, for them it's 100%. For that child, it's 100% towards achievement gap that they may not otherwise see. For that child who was born into a situation just out of pure lottery, this is a very focused effort. This is not a random act. This is right to that child. And so for that, I'm very proud to vote for this bill. I'm very proud of the work this committee has done. I know there's some areas that we didn't quite go as far as we'd like, and we'll get there. I believe that. I believe this is a great state with many intelligent people, and our superintendents, they're very creative. They know how to get through this. But this bill and the work that's done in the early learning area with the school readiness and the focused scholarship will make a difference, as I've said before, in ways that we cannot make just by passing laws down here. That will make such an impact. And so for that, I thank you, members, and I thank you for the work we've done, and I look forward to passing this bill on.
Thank you, Representative Crescia. Representative Slocum.
I'll be very brief. I'm not going to vote for the bill. There are parts of the bill that I really like. There are parts of the bill that I can't live with. And you heard testifier after testifier get up yesterday and give you plenty of reasons. I know your target's low, and I feel badly about that because I think it's short-sighted. For the state of Minnesota to not prioritize education. But I want to thank you, Representative Loon. Your door has been open. You've dealt fairly and honestly, I think, very much so, with certainly with me and I think with our caucus. And I appreciate that. And I think the way you've conducted the committee has been very admirable, and I just wanted to personally, on the record, compliment you.
Thank you, Representative Slocum. I do very much appreciate that. Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first, I'd like to echo what Representative Slocum said about U.S. Chair. You have been amazingly fair. You have listened. You've incorporated. I appreciate the provisions that are in this bill that I brought forward, so I want to thank you for that. The emphasis on early childhood, though, you know, there's more I would have liked to have seen done, I think was very, very good. But I have to say, and I know you did the best you could. We all did with the target that was given. But with a $2 billion surplus, to only be able to put 0.6% each year on the formula, I really can't understand that. I really can't understand that in the bigger picture. And I am so thrilled. For years I've advocated for and worked for early childhood. But then those kids grow up, and we've got to continue to make that progress. And when we're cutting teachers and increasing class size and cutting programs, with this, which is what's going to happen with this, we've heard testimony on that with this target, it is upsetting. So again, I want to conclude by thanking you for all the good that is in this bill, but saying that I just can't understand in the big picture how with a $2 billion surplus we are putting 0.5% on the formula.
Representative Mariani.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, I've served with you for, I think, 8 years, maybe 6 years. You and I used to sit together on this very committee, side by side. I've always had the deepest respect for you, and I continue to have that. I do want to say, and it was important that I say that because it's not a personal issue. The bills that come out of this committee and that come off before the House at this stage of the game reflects the values of the majority party. They reflect the values of the majority party. 2 years ago, we came out of this House coming out of a recession. We came at this stage of the game under Chair Marquardt. We came out with a 2% and 2% on the formula bill, chock full of education reform, including really strong accountability measures of our schools, of our students, of our teachers, etc. That reflected the values of our caucus at that time, and frankly, with over 100 votes on the floor of the House, they frankly reflected the values of both parties at that time, at least in this body. Madam Chair, you're not going to get to 100 votes on the floor of the House. You're not going to have the ability to do that. And you should have had that ability. Unfortunately, some other folks up the ladder made their values decisions, and their values decisions created what we have here today, which is a bill that quite simply is not workable for the people of Minnesota. And the big single word question everyone has across the state is why? 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 Representative Seltzer, I'm not going to repeat it. She said it quite succinctly. Minnesota is a strong, healthy state that's financially successful, has the ability to invest in kids. We primarily do that through this bill, and we're choosing not to. And I know there's 0.6, but frankly, 0.6 means negative dollars because inflation is a reality in the real world. And so we're actually disinvesting in our kids. And, Madam Chair, I'm pretty sure that doesn't reflect your values, having gotten to know you over the years, but we can't let your caucus off the hook on this issue, nor your leadership off the hook. You made a decision just like we made a decision 2 years ago. We had those closed-door meetings. We banged each other, we pushed each other, and we said, here are our values. And the result was the bill that invested in Minnesota's kids and in our schools. And there's lots of little good things in here. All the scholarship work is pretty good stuff. I still think there's work that needs to happen there. But we're talking about large systemic disinvestment in the state of Minnesota. And with good conscience, I just can't support this bill. I would encourage all of you to go back to the drawing well and to do something that I think should reflect the values that I think you each have, because I've gotten to know a number of you individually. I'm just perplexed why we're dealing with the situation we're dealing with in this committee here today. We're not in deficit, you know. It took the adult basic education program 6 years just to get back to that growth factor that they were 6-8 years ago. And all it took was for the state of Minnesota to be in surplus for us to whack them. You know, there's a dissonance here that makes no sense. It doesn't just make no sense to me, Madam Chair. I don't think it makes sense to the people of Minnesota. I wish you a lot of luck going forward with this bill. But frankly, I think you and the majority caucus could have done way better than what we have here today. I always stand ready to help if that's the case, but at this point I certainly cannot support this bill.
Thank you. Members, we do, the caucus is booked in this room, and so you're going to see a flood of Republican members coming in. So I know, well, and whether they're going to end up kicking us out. I had Representative Marquardt on the list. If you need to say, can you keep it super brief?
Yes, I will. Thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, thank you for your leadership on this committee and having the open dialogue here throughout the committee. It was very, very good. And I will just say one thing is that over the break, I was out and visited, I was in Morris with about 10 superintendents or so. And one, I thought, really summed it up when she said, here, with a $2 billion surplus, we're talking about school cuts and layoffs. And the room just, you know, really shook its head. So that's what I want to leave you with, because I think that kind of summed it up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Others have said it. The target you got was too small. But the target you got was the reflects the priorities of your caucus. We hear a lot from your side of the aisle about the importance of the business climate in Minnesota. And those are legitimate, that's a legitimate conversation to have. But your caucus has chosen to fetishize tax cuts beyond any rational public policy as the only thing that's important to business. Business will tell you that's not true. Business will tell you that it's a broader conversation than just tax cuts. It goes, in this committee in particular, the quality of the workforce. Minnesota has long prided itself rightfully on the quality of our workforce and built a strong economy because of that. The disinvestment that this bill represents damages that. But beyond that, it requires a transportation system that allows Minnesotans to get around and goods to get to market. And your caucus has also been unwilling to demonstrate leadership in the transportation area, even though business needs that. It requires investments in economic development strategies so that all of Minnesota enjoys and benefits from the strong economy we've gotten. Again, cuts in that area. And it requires things like a strong environmental policy. My sister-in-law used to work for a multi-state firm that was headquartered here. She lived in Colorado. She had to come back here once a year for training. And what her bosses here told her year after year, as a native Minnesotan who'd moved elsewhere, was the hardest thing they had to do was to convince people to come to Minnesota to relocate so that they could work with their rising leadership closely. And that was actually the second hardest. The hardest thing was to convince those people to leave Minnesota after they'd been here. Because that quality of life, particularly for our young millennials, is key. The decisions that the party opposite made in terms of their priorities and their values are shorting Minnesota kids and Minnesota's economy and Minnesota's future. I'll be a no vote. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, members, I wanted to allow those who had indicated they wanted to speak. I'm going to abbreviate my remarks. You'll hear it on the House floor. So really what I want to do is say thank you. I understand the concerns that have been raised. I know that probably my friends on the other side of the aisle are not going to vote for this bill. I understand. But I just want you all to understand that I also worked very hard with the money that we had to prioritize what I've set out as our top issues of concern and the things we wanted to tackle this year, and number one was the achievement gap. And I feel like the investments that we put in with the money that we had to devote to education really speaks to that. We increased early learning scholarships by 50% in our bill, a 40% increase in school readiness, a 70% increase in a proven literacy program in Reading Corps. We put more money into extended support revenue for kids who are struggling, fully funding concurrent enrollment. We devoted more than 60% of our target into the formula, and that's more than either the governor's bill or the Senate proposal that's out, with vastly larger sums of money. So while we can talk about the amount of money, and I know that'll continue to be a discussion, just understand that within the resources allocated, and I don't know if there's ever enough dollars to devote. There's always some concerns about inadequate lack of funding, but with what we had to do, I think we did some good things in this bill. And I know that many of you have shared those comments with me as well. So with that, just know that it has been a real pleasure working with all of you on this committee. I genuinely mean that. You have all contributed so much to the dialogue, to the ideas, to how we conduct our business, and I so appreciate every single one of you and what you've brought to our committee. With that, before we vote, I just want to do a special thank you to all of our staff, Ms. Larson, Ms. Johnson, Mr. Strom, Mr. Withers, Kane, Ms. Hauge, Ms. Nyman, our fabulous pages, Ben and Simon. And also, there is a student working in the revisor's office, Carly Davidson, as an intern from Carleton College, and then Jason Keenley from the revisor's office. I can't even begin to calculate how many hours over the past 2 weeks that those people have put in to making us get a bill together that we could put forward. So with that, members, I thank you, and we need to move to a vote. So with that, I will ask for members to cast their vote on House 844 as amended. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
With that, the bill is adopted. Thank you. Committee adjourned.